content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Beth Yoder for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is the September edition of Flavor. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from foodandwine.com the September issues of Food Network Magazine and Real Simple Magazine. And I also have, if I have time, I'll get to an article from the latest edition of Raleigh Magazine. But to start us off, from foodandwine.com, the Food and Wine Magazine's website, why France is spending $216 million to destroy 80 million gallons of wine. Well, this is a bummer. Some literary historians have traced the origin of the phrase, "Don't cry over spilled milk," back to an obscure 17th century book of Proverbs written by an equally obscure Welsh writer. Although "don't cry over spilled wine" may not be commonly used, wasted wine is definitely more painful and increasingly relevant this summer. In June, the European Union gave France 160 million euros, or $173 million, to destroy almost 80 gallons of wine. And the French government has since added, I think that's supposed to be 80 million gallons of wine. And the French government has since added another 40 million euros, $43 million, to that total. According to the Washington Post, over 80 million gallons of wine will be destroyed, and the alcohol left behind will be used in other products, like cleaning supplies, hand sanitizers, or perfumes. Government officials in France believe that it's necessary to eliminate a significant percentage of its wine crop, about 7% of last year's total, because there's a wine surplus caused by a combination of factors, including the lingering effects of the pandemic, the ongoing war in Ukraine, consumer inflation, and a change in drinking habits throughout the country. Earlier this summer, France's agriculture ministry also set aside 57 million euros, or $62 million, to fund the clearing, or technically the pulling up, of over 23,000 acres worth of vines in the Bordeaux growing region. And there are also funds available for grape farmers who want to use their land for olives or other crops. Agence France-Presse explains that the sharp decline in demand for wine means that prices have also fallen, leading to financial challenges for winemakers in the Bordeaux and Languedoc regions. "We're producing too much, and the sale price is below the production price, so we're losing money," Jean-Philippe Granier from the Languedoc Wine Producers Association told the AFP. The AFP also reports that, according to the European Commission, wine consumption has fallen by 22% in France, 22% in Germany, 7% in Italy, 34% in Portugal, and 10% in Spain. France specifically, wine drinking has dropped from 885 million gallons in 2005 to 665 million gallons in 2021. We have an underlying issue of how do we better engage with the consumer and make wine more relevant, make wine a relevant choice for consumers that have a lot of options. Stephen Ranacleve, a global sector strategist for beverages at Dutch financial services company Rabobank, told the Post, "Anything that leads to fewer gallons of spilled or full-on destroyed wine works for us." And now I've got a nice recipe for you for some chillier days that are coming. Charred tomato soup with cheesy garlic bread. And this is from the September issue of Food Network Magazine. You'll need 2 pounds of red tomatoes, about 6, cored and halved, 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, kosher salt and freshly ground pepper, 6 slices of applewood smoked thick-cut bacon, chopped, 1 white onion sliced, 6 cloves of garlic, 3 smashed and 3 finely grated, 2 tablespoons of tomato paste, 1 large sprig plus torn leaves of basil for topping, 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter at room temperature, 6 tablespoons of grated Parmesan cheese, half of a loaf of soft Italian or French bread split lengthwise, and 2 tablespoons of heavy cream plus more for drizzling. Preheat the broiler with a rack about 6 inches from the heat source. Rub the tomato halves with the olive oil on a rimmed baking sheet. Season with salt and pepper. Broil, turning once until charred, 8 to 10 minutes. Preheat the oven to 450 degrees. Cook the bacon in a large pot over medium heat, stirring until crisp, 8 minutes. Remove to paper towels. Add the onion and smashed garlic to the pot. Season with salt and pepper and cook 3 to 5 minutes. Stir in the tomato paste and cook for 2 minutes. Add the tomatoes and any juices along with the basil sprig. Cook until the tomatoes lose their shape, 3 to 4 minutes. Add 3 cups of water, bring to a simmer and cook until thickened, 10 to 15 minutes. Mash together the butter, grated garlic, 2 tablespoons of Parmesan, and a pinch each of salt and pepper. Spread on the bread. Sprinkle with 2 tablespoons of Parmesan. Bake until toasted about 10 minutes. Cut into pieces. Discard the basil and puree the soup. Stir in the heavy cream and remaining 2 tablespoons of cheese. Divide among the bowls. Top with heavy cream, the bacon, and torn basil. Serve with garlic bread. All right, going back to the Food and Wine website, flesh-eating bacteria in saltwater and oysters linked to several deaths. Here's what you need to know. Over the summer, 3 people in New York and Connecticut died, and an additional person was hospitalized, the New York Times reported, after they contracted Vibrio vulnificus, a rare but dangerous bacteria to humans. The bacteria is often associated with brackish waters, though sometimes it's also associated with eating raw or undercooked oysters and shellfish. Here's what you need to know about the deaths, your risk, and how to safely continue eating your favorite seafood. What to know about the 2023 deaths. According to the Times, 1 death occurred in Suffolk County on Long Island, and an additional 2 deaths and 1 hospitalization occurred in Connecticut. Though it isn't clear how each person came in contact with the bacteria, 1 person in Connecticut self-reported consuming a raw oyster from a restaurant out of state. Since July 1st, 3 cases of V. vulnificus infections have been reported to the Connecticut Department of Health, DPH, the organization shared in a statement. The 3 patients are between 60 and 80 years of age. All 3 patients were hospitalized and 1 died. 1 patient reported consuming raw oysters from an out-of-state establishment. 2 patients reported exposure to salt or brackish water in Long Island Sound. Both patients had pre-existing open cuts or wounds or sustained new wounds during these activities, which likely led to the infections. These instances are not alone in 2023. In August, the Florida Department of Health also reported that V. vulnificus caused 31 total cases and 6 deaths around the state in 2023. What to know? V. vulnificus, the Cleveland Clinic explained, is a type of bacteria that can enter the human body after eating uncooked or undercooked shellfish. The bacteria can also enter the body via an open wound when swimming and brackish water, aka the water found in areas where rivers meet the sea. The bacteria, the Cleveland Clinic added, can lead to sepsis, shock, and large spreading blisters that destroy tissues. According to the medical journal Stat Pearls, though it's found worldwide and infection rates are exceedingly low, V. vulnificus, quote, has the highest number of seafood-related deaths in the United States, end quote. The Washington Post further cited New York health officials, who stated that infections are more likely to occur over the warmer summer months between May and October along coastal environments. The Times also pointed to a 2023 study which showed that the bacteria, once considered rare in the northern half of the U.S., is becoming more common with increasing ocean temperatures. The researchers found that between 1988 and 2018, V. vulnificus wound infections increased eightfold, and that V. vulnificus infections may be present in every eastern U.S. state under medium to high future emissions and warming by 2100. Who is at risk? The CDC explains that though anyone can contract it, some people are more at risk than others, including those who may be immunocompromised. For example, people who have liver disease or take medicine that lowers the body's ability to fight germs. The Cleveland Clinic additionally lists those whose job or hobby, quote, put them in contact with raw shellfish or the seawater they live in, end quote, at higher risk, along with men and people assigned male at birth are more likely to get a serious infection than women and people assigned female at birth. Is there a cure? If caught early, antibiotics can be used to treat an infection. However, if the infection spreads, the Cleveland Clinic explains, surgery, including draining of wounds all the way to amputation, may be required. Can you tell if an oyster is infected? No. V. vulnificus does not make an oyster smell or taste any different. However, it's important to note that professional purveyors of oysters do everything in their power to protect both their product and you from infection. Paul McCormick from New York's Great Gun Oysters in East Moriches told Eater, "Public health is a chief concern of ours, and we take no risks in this regard. We harvest in shade, ice our product immediately upon harvest, maintain this temperature control through delivery, and keep all gear on the farm free from biofouling and any birds." Additionally, New York State has an official control plan aimed at stopping the spread of V. vulnificus. That plan includes requiring shellfish to be shaded at all times during the period of May 1st through October 31st, including on board the harvest vessel and during transport in any boat, vehicle, or other means of conveyance, and requiring all shellfish to be delivered to a certain dealer in Suffolk or Nassau County on the same day of harvest. New York shellfish farms are allowed to operate only in waters certified for shellfish harvest by the Department of Environmental Conservation, McCormick additionally told Eater, adding that the state has been under a strict Vibrio control plan for years. So, bottom line, is it dangerous to eat oysters and shellfish? Christopher Boyle, a spokesman for the Connecticut Department of Health, told The Times, two of its cases were contracted by people with open cuts who swam in the Long Island Sound. The third person contracted it after eating raw oysters, though the person consumed the oysters in an out-of-state restaurant. Nobody has ever been infected with Vibrio from eating shellfish or oysters in the state of Connecticut. Manisha Juthani, Connecticut's public health commissioner, noted in a news conference. In the end, it's up to you to assess your personal health and risks when it comes to eating uncooked seafood. WebMD lists oysters as being an abundant source of several vitamins and minerals. However, it too adds a footnote about the potential hazards of eating raw and undercooked foods. The CDC explains that it may be best to fully cook oysters and shellfish before eating and only order fully cooked oysters at restaurants. It adds that neither hot sauce nor lemon juice can kill Vibrio bacteria. Some oysters are treated for safety after they are harvested, the CDC says. This treatment can reduce levels of Vibrio in oysters, but it does not remove all harmful germs. The rates of illness in raw shellfish from New England are very small and improving. Bob Rolt, the executive director of the East Coast Shellfish Growers Association, shares with Food and Wine. For instance, Massachusetts harvests over 54 million oysters a year and counts about 12 Vibrio parahaemolyticus illnesses a year. So your odds of getting sick from commercially harvested shellfish in New England are vanishingly small. Rolt adds, the aquaculture industry has invested millions of dollars on ice machines, reefer trucks, and refrigeration units to ensure we have a safe supply of shellfish. Like the CDC and others, Rolt says, the message should not be to avoid oysters, but if you are immunocompromised, only eat them cooked. Where you do need to be cautious, however, is if you have an open wound, including one from surgery, a new tattoo, or a piercing. That is when you should steer clear of water, or at a minimum, cover your wound with a waterproof bandage. If your wound does come in contact with the water, the CDC advises to wash wounds and cuts thoroughly with soap and water after they have contact with salt water, brackish water, raw seafood, or its juices. And just in case you need some advice on how to cook shellfish and oysters the right way, don't worry, we've got you covered here. And that's at the Food and Wine website. What to cook? In season, rainbow shard. Why the name? In one bunch, you might find red, yellow, orange, and white stems. Technically a member of the beet family, this earthy, slightly bitter vegetable cooks more quickly than kale and doesn't shrink down the way spinach does. Look for bunches with bright stems and leaves. Pass over any with yellow or brown edges. Snip off the stem ends and wrap the shard in a damp towel. Refrigerate in an unsealed plastic bag and it'll stay fresh for a week. To cook, remove and slice the stems, then quickly pickle them in vinegar and salt. Stir the leaves into soups or sauté and add to omelets, rice, or pasta. Or just drizzle sautéed leaves with olive oil for a tasty side dish. All right, from this month's issue of Raleigh Magazine, what's the tea? 50 Cups Tea Shop now pouring organic, locally sourced teas. Are you stressed, sleepy, in desperate need of a detox or some post-workout sustenance? We have the tea for you. Now open on Wade Avenue and tailoring to all your tea needs is uncle and niece duo Jim Baker and Isabella Luciano's new 50 Cups Tea Shop, serving sips you can feel good about, from detox, refreshers, and immune-boosting teas to classics like green, Earl Grey, and English breakfast, plus coffee. And if you're craving more than a cuppa, satisfy hunger pains with fresh fare like almond butter toast, overnight oats, breakfast burritos, salads, and more. Luciano's tea blending prowess, procured from the World Tea Academy and travels across the pond, coupled with Baker's business acumen, perfectly position the two to elevate the local community via good-for-you drinks aiming to do more than just quench your thirst. The brewing brand also hopes to educate novice and seasoned tea drinkers about all the benefits of the Bev to boot. Tea is the number two drink in the world, right behind water, says Baker. We hope to offer our customers an inspirational experience through knowledge and great taste, translating into better health and well-being. Now that's some hot tea you're going to want to get in on. And their website is 5050cupstea.com. Learn a new trick. Make pizza on the grill. This is from Real Simple. Don't put your burger machine away just yet. Stephen Reichlin, author of the Barbecue Bible books and host of the TV series Project Fire and Planet Barbecue, shares how to whip up pies under the sky. Prep the ingredients. Start with 6 to 8 ounce balls of store-bought or homemade dough. Each pizza will feed one or two people. Bring the dough to room temperature for easy stretching. Have all the toppings near the grill, pre-cooked if necessary. No raw sausage or broccoli here. Light the grill. Heat the grill in two zones, one medium-high and the other medium-low. Oil the grates with a folded paper towel dipped in vegetable oil. Use tongs to draw it across the grates. Do the dough. Stretch the dough on an oiled baking sheet. Then drape it over the hotter zone of the grill. Cook for a few minutes until firm on the bottom and blistered on top. Flip and top it. Slide the dough onto the cooler zone of the grill and flip it with tongs. Top it with cheese first, then dollop on the sauce, and add the rest of your toppings. Slide the pizza back to the hot side of the grill. Finish strong. Close the grill and cook for a few minutes until the cheese is melted and the bottom side of the dough is firm. Slide the pizza onto a cutting board. Add herbs, olive oil, and more cheese if you want. Slice, serve, and enjoy. And I think I've got time for bacon and pimento grilled cheese. 8 slices of thick-cut bacon. 4 ounces of extra sharp cheddar cheese grated, about 1 cup. 2 ounces of cream cheese softened. 1/4 cup of chopped drained pimentos. 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne. 1/4 teaspoon of onion powder. 6 tablespoons of mayonnaise. 1/2 cup loosely packed fresh basil leaves, roughly chopped. 8 1/2 inch thick slices of sourdough bread. And 8 1/4 inch thick slices of tomato. Heat a large nonstick skillet over medium, working in batches if needed. Cook bacon, flipping often, until crisp, about 8 minutes. Transfer to a paper towel lined plate. Remove skillet from heat and discard the drippings. Meanwhile, stir together the cheddar, the cream cheese, the pimentos, cayenne, onion powder, and 2 tablespoons of mayonnaise in a medium bowl until combined. Spread 1 1/2 teaspoons of mayonnaise on one side of each bread slice. Arrange 4 bread slices, mayonnaise side down, on a work surface. Spread evenly with cheddar mixture. Top each with 1 tablespoon of basil, 2 bacon slices, 2 tomato slices, and 1 more tablespoon of basil. Top with remaining bread slices. Mayonnaise side up. Heat the skillet over medium. Cook 2 sandwiches until golden brown, 2 to 3 minutes per side. Remove from skillet and cook remaining 2 sandwiches. Slice in half and serve. From Food Network Magazine, let's hear it for tomatillos. Don't confuse these green, unripened tomatoes. Tomatillos come from a completely different plant. They have a firm texture and tart, citrusy flavor, which makes them perfect in salsas and salads. But they're also great cooked down into a sauce. Be sure to remove the husk and rinse off any sticky residue before you use them. Good gear. A cutting board with a groove is a must-have for carving steak. It collects all those delicious juices instead of sending them onto your counter. Don't forget to let the meat rest for 10 minutes before slicing so the juices redistribute. This makes steak and other proteins more tender. Here's a hot tip. Summer tomatoes are super flavorful, and if you char them, they'll taste even better. Start with ripe, not soft, tomatoes. Pat them dry and lightly brush with oil. Char under the broiler or on the grill, turning until the skin blackens and splits in spots. Use them in the soup I talked about earlier, or serve them as a side dish. How to make scrambled eggs. This is a cooking oil segment, cooking school segment. First, brush a nonstick skillet with oil or butter and heat over low heat. If the pan is too hot, the eggs will cook too quickly. Number two, lightly beat the eggs and add to the pan. Stir slowly and constantly with a rubber spatula until large curds form and the eggs are no longer wet. Remove from the heat briefly if the eggs start setting too quickly. Stir in cheese, herbs, or other ingredients that immediately transfer the eggs to a plate so they don't overcook. Coming up next month, I'll have strawberry hand pies recipe for you, a chocolate almond cake, a 6-ingredient dessert that comes together so easily it practically makes itself. And then I also have an article about a lawsuit alleging Brita's filters are not nearly as effective as advertised. A California man is suing Brita over what he alleges is a misleading message on its water filtration package. And then I have some cooking tips and tools for the blind and disabled. So make sure you tune in next month for the October issue of Flavor. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Flavor. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Beth Yoder, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Flavor is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks so much for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.